Sue, thank you very much, and I shall have trouble living up to an introduction like that, but I shall have trouble living up to anything. I stand before you as someone who is both up to date and completely out of touch. I'm a testament to the power of modern science, and I am a sad reminder that journalism isn't what it used to be. Now let's talk about those two conditions. One of them is just obvious. I owe my life to science. My lungs are not eaten by tuberculosis, my limbs are not withered by polio, and my face is not scarred by smallpox, but I was born in an era when all three things could happen, and did happen, to children of my age, and they went on happening for some children for some decades afterwards. Science and the social advances that science has made possible mean that I am now better housed, better fed, and better travelled than any Renaissance prince or medieval baron. That's something to boast about, by the way, when you think, hey, I'm richer than a Medici. I don't have better paintings, but I'm richer. I've experienced better schooling than Shakespeare or Dickens. Neither of them had the education that I've had, and I left school at 16, but I still had a better education than they did. The use I have made of it, of course, is quite different. I have more calculating power literally at my fingertips than Galileo or Isaac Newton, and I owe all these things to science. So there's a case for science communication at the most simple level. People ought to realise how lucky they are and why they are so lucky, and how they must invest in science intellectually and with enthusiasm to keep this happy status going. Now the journalism question. I am truly out of date. I have never blogged uninvited. I may never blog. I started in the journalism of hot metal and linotype and monotype, of compositors and proofreaders and inflexible deadlines. This, in New Zealand then, was a world entirely without information officers or press officers or communications directors or even public relations agencies. They were happening in America, of course, and they certainly began to happen in Britain, but they hadn't happened in New Zealand. So if you wanted a story from the police, you went to the police station, and you said to the station sergeant, is there anything going on? And he said, well, we've got a couple of drinks. I won't go into the detail, but every Christmas, we would break to go to the police station carrying tins of cigarettes, 200 by 200 caps and full strength, dump them on the desk, and say, just a little present from the New Zealand Herald. Because, of course, you couldn't call it a bribe. It was just a little Christmas good cheer for some useful, friendly cops who helped you out when you needed it. There wasn't a press officer you could consult. There was no television news. In New Zealand, there was no television news because there was no television. It didn't turn up until 1961, and, of course, I had already left the country when it first tuned on. And radio, although it picked up the BBC World Service News, offered no competition whatsoever. So newspapers were money-making machines. The New Zealand Herald, when I joined it, actually had advertisements on the front page. And when I came to England in 1961, so did the Times. People bought newspapers. They bought two or three newspapers. And they were prepared to turn over the adverts until they found the news. So we had it made. Reporters went out to find stories. You didn't actually look up anything on the internet, and most of the time you didn't bring them up because there was a chance that they wouldn't be on. So you went out to find a story. You went out with a pencil, notebook, and tuppence for the phone, because if you were lucky enough to find a public telephone that hadn't been vandalised, of course you still had to put two pence in the slot to get through to the copy taker to phone your story over. Journalists were paid relatively poorly, and they enjoyed, and enjoyed is the right word, because journalists, as you must have noticed, are a contrary lot, enjoyed very low public esteem. Science journalism certainly existed, but news desks tended to regard the science correspondent as a necessary menace, handy for history making things like moon landings or heart transplant operations, but not otherwise to be encouraged. It was assumed that it was science that was boring. So, of course, no young journalist ever went into journalism wanting to be a science journalist.